And here's my opinion today. My opinion is we got to start thinking about frugal food. You know, for everybody that was afraid of the financial meltdown and afraid that we're all going to you-know-where in a handbasket, I say, let's get real. Let's not do what Wall Street did and be in denial. Let's actually lift the veil. And so when we start talking about frugal food, what we're actually talking about is not being reckless with our money at the grocery store or in the kitchen. When I hear individuals and they're all saying you got to run out and buy a hybrid car in order to reduce your greenhouse gases, what they don't realize is that there's no faster way to reduce your effect on global warming than to change your food habits. Not wasting food will have more impact on global warming than whether you go out and buy a new car. So, in order for us to embrace the idea of frugal food, the first thing we have to have is an attitude of gratitude. Because when we're looking at cutting our food budgets, if we do so from the position that is, well, it's kind of like the little kids sound, wah. If we're going, oh, I can't have the canapes anymore with the pate on them. Gee, my budget won't allow caviar. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the attitude of gratitude that we live in a country where we actually waste food. We're not living in a country where we can't even find enough food to eat. And so when I see how much food gets thrown out and how wasteful we are as a country, it really astounds me in looking at the hunger issues that are around the world and thinking about the fact that we have thousands of people right here in Sarasota County that go to bed hungry every night, including over 1,000 kids. You know, when I hear about the All-Face Food Bank providing all the hundreds of thousands of meals that they provide every month, hundreds of thousands of meals, yeah, you heard me right, and that 40% of those meals are given to children 17 years and younger, it really does help me maintain my attitude for gratitude. And it says that one of the first things that I want to do if I'm going to use frugal food strategy is to use everything. Use everything that I buy. We want to stop throwing out food. So if you pay attention to whatever you throw out, you're going to learn how to shop better. You're going to learn how to prepare better, plan better, and actually have higher quality meals. You know darn good and well that when you go out to a restaurant, you're going to spend for that meal an average of 34%. Now, I didn't say that very clearly. Let's start that over. Restaurants work on a margin that says that they can't spend more than 34% of the cost of the meal on the food. In other words, if you buy a meal for $10, they paid $3.40 for the food. If you buy a meal that costs $30, then they spent a little over $10 to buy it. So if you want to multiply your money, one of the first ways you multiply your money is to reduce the number of restaurant meals that you're eating out. In fact, restaurant meals, some of them are going to be thank you gifts when we have our fun drive. So that's the way we want you to put your money. If you put your money into WSLR, and then that way we can offer you a thank you gift of a restaurant meal. But otherwise, we definitely want to reduce restaurant meals. And that says that we want to do things like make it yourself. We want to learn to cook, cook, cook. And cook, cook, cook doesn't mean that you have to chain yourself to the stove. It simply says that you're going to take responsibility to clone your favorite recipes and do it in your own kitchen. And so as I was starting to write my column for next month's Natural Awakenings, and remember, if you ever want to read my old columns, just go up on eveplews.com. All my old columns for Natural Awakenings and some of the other publications that I write for are posted, and we're gradually filling up all of those postings. So eveplews.com, nothing but columns. And so when I started to put that column together, I thought, you know, what's the very first way that I could cut costs in my kitchen? And what popped into my head was another head. It was a cabbage head. Oh, I love cabbage. I'm sure that there are poems to cabbage out there that if I wanted to take the time on the web, I could look them up. You know, we got poems to beans and potatoes and apples, but I don't know. I got to put cabbage at the top of the list. And because you know I endorse organic so much, here's a situation where I don't have to. You know, when you go up on EWG.org, that's the Environmental Working Group website, one of my favorite websites for good news on health and the environment, you'll find out that cabbage is among the lowest contaminated vegetables as far as pesticides, herbicides, and fungicides. When we look at that dirty dozen, when we look at that top 12 fruits and vegetables that are virtually always contaminated with pesticides, 99% of the strawberries, 94% of the peaches, 96% of the apples, then those are things that I really want to insist that you buy organically. Because even if you only buy organic for those top 12 dirty dozen, you will reduce your pesticide contamination in your diet probably by half or more. And you can find that list when you go up on EWG.org and do on their search engine the Dirty Dozen, or just click on health and it will take you to that. And you can print down that list so you can carry it with you to the grocery store. And as you look at those 43 fruits and vegetables that the Environmental Working Group has on that list, and by the way, they don't do those studies. It's the United States Department of Agriculture that does those studies. USDA measures the pesticide residue in 100,000 samplings of fruit and vegetables, and they're always washed before they're sampled, just like you would do in your own kitchen, or I would hope you would do in your own kitchen. So because of that, you know that when you're looking at that list, if you look at the bottom 12 that are on that list, or even the bottom 20, those are the foods that very rarely have pesticide contamination, and happily, cabbage is on that. And the cabbage family, boy, it is a head above the rest. But moreover, it's inexpensive. Even if you're buying organic cabbage, it's inexpensive. And so as we begin to talk about frugal food, and I'm probably going to do a number of shows about frugal food, we want to start right away with something that's as powerful as cabbage, because not only does it have an incredible amount of variety available to it, it is yummy. And I'm going to give you all sorts of ideas before this show is over, so you want to make sure you got your pencil and paper handy every time you listen to No Nonsense Nutrition. Actually, anytime you listen to WSLR, because there's always great ideas coming out on this station. It's not just pounds and pounds of sounds and sounds. Well, when we think about the cabbage, we got to go all the way back to ancient Rome, because they thought they could cure breast cancer by rubbing paste made from cabbage on women's breasts. Now, I'm certain that there are volunteers who are willing to make that application, but they might have dismissed that practice as folklore, but, you know, now we're not quite so sure. Because what we found out is that if you take cabbage and you make it into a paste and you rub it on the back of laboratory animals, you can prevent tumors from developing. Sure. That happened at the Foundation for Preventive Oncology and the Institute for Hormone Research in New York. But I don't really want you to make cabbage paste and rub it on your rat or even rub it on your breasts. What I want you to do is absorb the healing properties of cabbage simply by eating it. You know, cabbage not only fights off a variety of cancers, but it contains a wealth of nutrients that can ward off heart disease, digestive problems, and much more. We have to start with talking about cabbage against cancer. Because when I looked around the world for the countries that have the lowest rate of breast cancer, and I found out it was Japan and it was Poland. In Japan, likely because of the high iodine in the diet, and in Poland, likely because of the high amount of cabbage in the diet. Now, there are lots of members of this cruciferous vegetable family. You've heard me talk about them a lot on No Nonsense Nutrition. So whether we're talking about broccoli or cauliflower, Brussels sprouts or bok choy, cabbage or kale, all of them have some of these constituents, but cabbage really does shine in a lot of areas in being particularly effective in preventing cancers of the breast, the prostate gland, and of the colon. There are two compounds in particular in cabbage that scientists believe make it a cancer-fighting food. And the first of these is indole-3-carbinol, or I3C. No, indole-3-carbinol doesn't just roll off the tongue. I3C is easier to remember. this compound actually metabolizes harmful estrogen. You know, you got three kinds of estrogen in your body. Yeah, men that are listening to the show, you got three kinds of estrogen as well. Well, Mother Nature's not reckless or wasteful. Mother Nature only makes one testosterone, only makes one progesterone, but it makes three different estrogens. So it would seem that the body has different uses for those three different estrogens, and that turns out to be true. But after the body uses any of these sex steroid hormones, it rips them apart. You know, the body uses the hormone goes on the receptor site, it stays there for a particular period of time, depending on the hormone, and then that hormone is released and goes back into circulation, and it goes to your liver, where your liver has to rip it apart so it can be excreted. You know, hormones fundamentally are toxins in the body in the sense that once they do their job, we want them out of here. And the nature of your thyroid gland is if you made thyroid 24 hours a day and you didn't unmake thyroid, you'd become hyperthyroid. If you made insulin 24 hours a day and you didn't unmake insulin, you'd go in a coma. So there are reasons that the body unmakes hormones. Well, when we take a hormone apart, we can send it out door number one, door number two, or door number three. We can turn it into an estrogen derivative, or what's known as an estrogen metabolite, that is actually protective to the body, or we can turn it into an estrogen metabolite that's like a blowtorch. It sets fire to cells. So what we've learned from indole-3-carbinol is that it shifts the metabolism of estrogen over to the protective metabolite, and as a result, reduces greatly the level of harmful hormones. Actually, I have women in my private practice that come in, menstruating women who have breast tenderness as one of their PMS symptoms prior to the onset of their cycle. And most often this will happen in the 3 to 7 days prior to the onset that their breasts will get tender. Well, if I have women just do nothing but eat coleslaw every day in the last week of their cycle, they'll find out that it will reduce that sensitivity because it's scrolling out those harmful hormones. There's no doubt that if we give pure I3C, it will work, and we use it in practice as a supplement. There are actually two compounds that come out of the cabbage family that I have in a pill that I will recommend in practice. But for the average person, eating cabbage or any of these cabbage-like vegetables like broccoli and cauliflower, etc., have similar effects because of giving you that I3C. Actually, if you want even more protection, replace your usual cabbage with bok choy or Chinese cabbage. Laboratory research has found out that a compound in bok choy called brassinin may help prevent breast tumors. So if you're one of those people that's, especially fond of Chinese food and Thai food and other Asian food, you'd be familiar with bok choy chopped up into that dish, just looking like a wide piece of celery. Cabbage also contains another compound called sulforaphane. And sulforaphane is just really a remarkable compound because it's been shown to block cancer by stepping up the production of tumor-preventing enzymes in the liver. We have these special enzymes in the liver called phase 2 enzymes that really help the body take out the trash, and not just to change the harmful estrogen metabolites, but to work on all sorts of protection in the body, tumor prevention. When we look at the research that's been done at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, when they took laboratory animals and exposed them to powerful cancer-causing chemicals, they did so with animals that hadn't received any special treatment, and then the other half of the animals had been fed these high doses of sulforaphane that we'll find in cabbage in the cabbage family. 50 days later, 68% of the unprotected animals had breast tumors, but only 26% of those given the high doses of sulforaphane had breast tumors. So we're talking about reducing risk substantially by using members of these cabbage family. But again, why am I talking about that on Frugal Food? It's because cabbage is cheap. It's available all year long. It's especially plentiful in the cooler months. October is when that cabbage family hits the market at the cheapest prices of the year. So sulforaphane makes cabbage a particularly prized fighter in the battle against colon cancer as well. It stimulates levels of glutathione in the colon, which we know sweeps toxins out of the body before they have a chance to damage the delicate cells that are lining the intestinal wall. Eating any kind of cabbage on a regular basis will lower your risk for cancer. To get the best possible protection, though, you can't do any better than Savoy cabbage. Savoy contains not only the I3C and the sulforaphane, but four more tongue-twisting phytonutrients: beta-sitosterol, pheophyton A, nanocosane, nanocosinone, you know, things that are real easy to use in a cocktail party conversation. Well, what they are powerful contenders against the cancer-causing agents. So cabbage gives you that, but not only that, you got antioxidants such as vitamin C and vitamin E and beta-carotene that help ward off disease by mopping up harmful oxygen molecules called free radicals that naturally accumulate in the body. You know, free radicals damage the healthy tissue in the body. They cause changes that lead to heart disease, cancer, and other serious conditions. And members of the cabbage family are packed with these incredibly nutritious compounds in order to slow down that process. You know that I think we should be taking antioxidants via supplements, but we also should be tipping our diet to get more antioxidants through our food. And cabbage is one of the easiest ways to do it. Particularly good are the cabbages like bok choy and savoy, which are super sources of beta carotene. You know, a lot of people don't realize that there's beta carotene in those foods because they think that beta carotene is carrot colored, that it's orange, and only the orange foods like papaya and mango and cantaloupe and peaches and sweet potatoes and butternut squash contain beta carotene. But wonderful sources of beta carotene in the cabbage. High blood levels of beta carotene are related to lower incidence of heart attacks and certain types of cancers, as well as cataracts. But cabbages are also high in vitamin C. You know, we know how much vitamin C can boost immunity, reduce blood pressure, fight heart disease, reduce allergies. Now, even though we see that a half a cup of these cabbages may only provide, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 milligrams of C, and you say, Eve, that's just chump change. That isn't very much. Gee, my vitamin has 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C in it. But what's true is we've learned that the vitamin C that occurs naturally in food has a synergistic effect with the other nutrients that are in the food, and they create even more protection. So even though there may only be 27 milligrams of vitamin C in that serving of cabbage, it acts like 10 times that amount in the body because of the way it synergistically works with the other nutrients that are present. We're also going to find out that cabbage has got folate in it. You know, we've done shows on here. We did a show on here with Dr. Harvey, and happily he'll be joining me on the show again next week, talking about the risks of stroke, Alzheimer's, and heart disease that can be reduced with something as simple as folic acid. So we're going to find decent sources of folate in all of the cabbage family. Your body uses folate for normal tissue growth. And so not only does it protect against cancer and heart disease, it protects against birth defects, which is why we have it reinforcing some of the foods like enriched flour that we actually remove it and then we put it back. Women are especially at high risk for folate deficiency if they're taking birth control pills. So you can hear that I'm a big cheerleader for cabbage, and I'm a big cheerleader for cabbage as one of many examples of frugal food. Well, some people will say, you know, I don't want the cabbage because I don't like the cabbagey smell. And so we're going to give you some solutions for dealing with that cabbagey smell as well. That's the sulfur that you're smelling. You know, like the onion family, the cabbage family has these formidable chemical warriors that are the strong flavors. And so when we look at this stockpile of these defensive chemicals that are in their tissue, the flavor precursors, the enzymes that activate, when the plant's cells are damaged, as soon as you cut them, it's just like a garlic, as soon as you crush it, the enzymes start a chain of reaction that generates the bitter, pungent, and strong-smelling compounds. The special cabbage family system is effective enough that it actually inspired the notorious man-made version, which was the mustard gas of World War I. The cabbage family turns out to have parts of the onion's defensive system, and they contribute these sulfur aromatics to the overall flavor of the cabbage family. But the stockpiled these precursors that are already present in there can be diffused if the second that you chop the cabbage, you just put it directly into cold water. You know, different preparation and cooking methods can give different flavor balances in the cabbage relatives. So when we chop coleslaw, you know, we're increasing the liberation of these flavor compounds from these precursor enzymes. If you dress it in an acidic sauce, well, that's vinegar. Some pungent products increase sixfold. But if you soak the chopped cabbage in cold water, it'll leach out most of those flavor compounds formed by chopping, and at the same time, it hydrates the leaves and it makes them crisper. So if that's something that you're saying, well, I'm avoiding cabbage because it's a little too strong for me, then try throwing it in the cold water and see if you make a difference. Heating cabbages and their friends has really two different effects. Initially, when the temperature rises within the cabbage, it speeds the enzyme activity. It speeds the flavor generation. But the enzymes stop working altogether before it gets to the boiling point. They're activated again by plunging the vegetables into boiling water, and the flavor precursor molecules will be left intact. So look at the dichotomy here. We could chop it and throw it immediately into cold water, or we could chop it and immediately throw it into boiling water. In either ways, it will change the molecules in there. Now, there's occasions when that isn't desirable. Taking something like mustard greens, which is a member of the cabbage family, and very quickly cooking it in hot water actually preserves the bitterness of the pungency precursors, whereas boiling in a large amount of water leaches the molecules out of the water and produces a milder flavor than it does when you stir fry it or steam it. But if the cooking period is prolonged, the constant heat gradually transforms the flavor molecules, and eventually the sulfur compounds end up forming what are called trisulfides. And these accumulate, and they're responsible for that smell of overcooked cabbage. So prolonged cooking is not the first thing that we want to think about when we're thinking about cabbage. Even though it makes members of the onion family more sweet and mellow, it makes cabbage family members more overbearing and unpleasant. But thanks to the fact that they share some of the same enzyme system, when we mix onion and cabbage family, we produce surprising effects. Actually, adding bits of raw scallion to some cooked and therefore non-pungent version actually transfers them into sweeter tastes. So right away, I'm going to give you my favorite cooked cabbage recipe, which is red cabbage. And you know, red cabbage does have higher amounts of vitamin C, higher amounts of beta carotene, and higher amounts of other antioxidant compounds than green. Doesn't necessarily make it better, just makes it different. But I love chopping up an onion and sautéing it in a little olive oil and then adding a large amount of chopped cabbage. You know, it really does cook down, so it's not uncommon just for the two of us that I'll use a half a head of cabbage. Sometimes I'll do part green and part red, but more often in this dish I'll use red. And I'll take an apple, and if I've got a green apple or one of the real hard apples, that's generally my first choice. Put that in to add just a little bit of sweetness. And then take equal parts of vinegar and brown sugar. You can use balsamic vinegar or mild vinegar like rice vinegar. You want to replace the sugar, just use stevia. So I might use a quarter of a cup of balsamic vinegar and a quarter of a cup of water and a dozen drops of stevia into that dish and make a sweet and sour cabbage dish. It's a real favorite of mine. Think about coleslaw. You know, there's as many varieties of coleslaw as there are grandmothers. Everybody likes a different kind. You know, if you grew up in the South, then you were probably used to that gooey, sweet coleslaw. And maybe if you were from the Northeast, it was more common that you had a vinegary slaw. But I'm certain that if I asked every single person that's listening to No Nonsense Nutrition right here on WSLR, I'd get a different recipe for coleslaw. We can put a little caraway seeds in it and make it the German style. We could do what my Lebanese girlfriend suggested to me, which is adding a little bit of onion, which I found really brightened the flavor. Sometimes I make slaw all green, sometimes I make slaw all red, and sometimes I make slaw tricolored with a little green, a little red, and a little carrot thrown in just for that bright coloring effect. When I was getting my pedicure last week, I was talking to the gal Mercedes that gives me my pedicure, and I said, "What's your favorite coleslaw recipe?" And she had one that we really can't put on the frugal food list, but I would have to add it for the days that we're not being frugal, and that's a blue cheese coleslaw. She says she'll take a packet of blue cheese or gorgonzola cheese that's been crumbled and toss that in with the cabbage and set it aside, and then she'll make her dressing with vinegar, a little bit of pepper, a little bit of mayonnaise, a dash of sugar, and toss that in with the blue cheese. And she says it's one of those dishes that every time she serves it, everybody says, "What is this?" So that's a new and novel way that we can serve slaw. But you're saying, "Eve, I don't know that I want to eat coleslaw every day." Then take your cabbage, put it over the grater, just pass 3, 4, 5 strokes over the grater and throw it in on top of your salad. You know, cabbage is cheaper than lettuce these days. And maybe your salad, instead of being 100% lettuce, is 2/3 lettuce and 1/3 cabbage. You know, cabbage is very stable. It keeps really well if it's tightly wrapped in the refrigerator. So you can just grate off a couple of passes on your grater, wrap it back up and stick it back in the fridge and use it again in tomorrow's salad. Over and over again, we're going to find out that as we start to talk about frugal food, that cabbage is going to come to the top of the list as one of the things that we can buy very inexpensively all year long and add it in, I don't know, I want to think 1,000 different ways because there are so many different cabbages. Now, I haven't seen any Portuguese cabbage around here. It was something I used to find when I was out in Colorado. But, you know, when I look at kale and collards, broccoli and cauliflower, Brussels sprouts and kohlrabi, all of the different mustard greens, arugula, watercress, even nasturtium, all of those are the original Mediterranean cabbage. You know, when I look at the Asian cabbages, not only do I have Chinese cabbage or bok choy, or Napa cabbage. My husband and I are members of a food co-op, members of a farm, and beginning next month, we start getting our basket of organic foods every Wednesday, and last year was the first time I was introduced to a brassica or a cabbage family that comes from Asia called tatsoi. Actually became quite a favorite in my household. So there's lots of species that are surrounded around this cabbage family. You know, botanical nomenclature is always evolving, and so you would have heard it called either the Cruciferia family, Cruce, C-R-U-C, Cruc, actually means cross. And so when you look at the flower of the cabbage family, it's an equal-armed cross. Oh, just one of those little factoids for those botanists that are out there. And, you know, then there's recent hybrids that have come out. I remember I was in the store recently and saw the product called Broccolini. And Broccolini is an example of one of the recent hybrids that came to us from the cabbage family. But when we look at these pungent sulfur compounds, Brussels sprouts are clearly the highest on the list with those pungent compounds, and cauliflower the lowest on the list, and cabbage about right in between. But I want over and over again to get those stockpiled defensive molecules in my body of sulforaphane and indole 3 carbinol, because those are things that are going to give me cancer protection and give me an opportunity to have something really yummy. So let's look at frugal food and see what sort of strategies that we can have. You know, one of my strategies is use everything. Buy whole chickens. Look for sales. I was in the local health food market here in town, the one that I affectionately refer to as Whole Paycheck, and they had chickens on sale. And the chickens are on sale for $1.99 a pound, the chickens that didn't have any antibiotics in it. And I went, yahoo! And I bought 4 of them because I knew I had room in my freezer for 4 whole chickens. So use your freezer. Buy them when they're cheap. I got whole chickens raised without the use of hormones or antibiotics for $5 a piece. There's no way you could beat that with a stick. And they're even willing to cut them up for you. Actually, I didn't want them cut up. I want them left whole because I love them roasted. So we need to bulk buy and we need to use the freezer. But just think about this one item. When we're buying chickens and turkeys, if I buy turkey with the bone in as a turkey breast, I'm going to pay $6 a pound for it. But if I buy turkey thighs with the bone in, I'm going to pay $3 a pound for them. That's an amazing difference. Half of the money. And what's true is turkey thighs taste way the heck better than turkey breast does. You know, turkey breast often gets overcooked and gets dry and really doesn't have a lot of flavor. That's why I see people having to slap a lot of mayonnaise on their turkey sandwich. And now we're not talking about turkey loaf. Remember, if we buy prepared turkey loaf, it's a long way from a fresh piece of turkey. You know, if you did nothing but stopping the purchasing of turkey in a package and did nothing but just buy turkey, even bone in, at $6.99 a pound, you'd save money right away. Because those prepackaged slices of deli meat turkey often cost that much for a quarter of a pound. They're full of sugar and full of water. What do you mean full of sugar and full of water? They take a turkey breast, they put it in a brine, and they allow that meat to absorb as much of that sweetened and salted water as it can, and then they're actually selling you water for $6.99 a pound. So you're always going to be cheaper just buying the plain turkey breast, but if you really want a lot of flavor, look at turkey thighs. At $3 a pound, even the antibiotic-free ones, yum, yum. Easy to pour a little barbecue sauce on them and throw them in the oven. Easier to pan sear them. You know, just spray a little of your nonstick spray in the bottom of the pan and sear them quickly. Do them in a crock pot. Fix them with a stew. I like to sear them. Put in a couple of carrots, a couple of stalks of celery, a big onion cut up, a little bit of potato in there, and simmer that for an hour, and you got a great dinner. So we want to understand that frugal food eating doesn't mean that suddenly we're just eating beans out of a can. It's making substitutions. And it's using strategies. Using everything and buying in bulk and using your freezer, that's a strategy. Trading turkey breast for turkey thighs, that's a substitution. Quick way to reduce your food costs is just take out the junk. You know, if I take the soda and the, you know, all the jive food out of your basket, I got plenty of money left over for high quality food. But the place that we make the mistake is doing things like buying portion sizes. You know, they've come out with those individual packets of cookies and crackers and all sorts of things in portion sizes. You pay an unbelievable premium when you're buying portion size servings. All of those things are things you can make yourself. You know, every week I take my 7 little snack size Ziploc bags and I put my handful of raw nuts in there or lightly roasted nuts and make my own little snack bags. Real easy strategies that we can use to cut our food costs. The other way that we can really cut our food costs is just to eat less meat. You've heard over and over here on No Nonsense Nutrition that our planet can't support the amount of meat eating that we're doing currently. You know, cows and pigs are methane belchers, and actually it comes out both ends, and that's a contributor to greenhouse gases, actually 19 times more powerful than the carbon dioxide that's coming out of your tailpipe in terms of affecting greenhouse gases. So every time you eat less meat, you not only do a good thing for your budget, you do a good thing for the planet. When we're eating animals that mature quickly, like chickens and turkeys, as opposed to animals that take years to mature, like cows, we really have a different concentration of toxins in the tissue, and we really have a very different impact in terms of the ecology of the world. So I've endorsed repeatedly here on this show that we look at taking those 14 lunches and dinners and even making four of those lunches and dinners bean-based meals. You know, beans provide more protein in the vegetable kingdom than any other source. Not only will they lower cholesterol and stabilize blood sugar and, just like cabbage, reduce the risk of breast and prostate cancers, but help prevent heart disease in people who have diabetes. There's no question that we can put dinner on the table and a tremendous variety of dinner on the table with beans as the primary part of the meal. So with all of the prepared bean burgers that are out there in the marketplace, maybe it's a lentil burger or a black bean burger one day. Bean soups, no question about it. I can make a pot of bean soup for less than $2 and get 6 servings out of it. Split pea soup this week, 1 cup of split peas. Always buy them in bulk. Never buy them in the bag. If you go into any of the markets and you look at the difference between the cost of the split peas in bulk and the split peas in the bag, they're more than 50% lower when you're buying them in bulk. So a cup of split peas and a cup of onions and a cup of carrots and a half a dozen bay leaves, and by golly, an hour later I've got split pea soup. Have that with a toasted cheese sandwich or a salad on the side, a lovely piece of cornbread, a nice whole meal roll, and you've got a meal that's going to cost you less than $2, and it's going to be a meal that is going to be deeply nourishing. You know, a generation ago, beans were really culinary outcasts. I remember seeing crocks of kidney beans, usually untouched, that sat next to the peaches at the salad bar. But today, hummus has really been the wedge that has introduced people to having beans in a different way, which is as bean pate. Yeah, bean pate sounds a lot better than bean dip to me. Even if you take a can of beans, and think about it, even organic beans, you can get a can of beans for $1. Take that can of beans, drain off the liquid, but reserve it. Put that can of beans in your food processor and whir it up. Add a piece of raw garlic or a wedge of raw onion. I happen to like the spice cumin in beans. Maybe you like a little hot sauce in there too. And then just add back the amount of liquid that you need to make it the right viscosity, and you made yourself a nice bowl of bean dip. Hummus contains olive oil, lemon, and sesame butter. It's really a different kind of product, but you can make hummus out of any bean. You can add that garlic and lemon juice and a little bit of sesame butter, also known as tahini, to black beans, to kidney beans, to great northern beans. But you can make that bean dip that I just suggested out of any species of bean. Put it on a celery stick. Roll it up in a burrito. It's easy to make, inexpensive to use. You know, we're using more beans in the country now. We're getting up close to about 10 pounds per person per year, which is a lot more than it was 25 or 30 years ago when we barely consumed 5 pounds a person, because we know that beans are the ultimate power food. Not only are they inexpensive, but they're low in fat and high in protein. They're high in fiber and have a variety of vitamins and minerals. They're actually little chemical factories with lots of biologically active substances in them, once again, that help to protect against cancer. So as we begin to look at the attitude of gratitude, the fact that we live in a country where we've got a plethora of food, and we decide that we do want to become more frugal in our kitchen, stretch our meals, use more leftovers, pack our lunches, and take drinks. My husband and I were out to dinner about a week ago, and I realized when we got our bill, which was $54 for the meal, that my glass of wine and his beer and the single cappuccino that he had after the meal were $26 of the $54 that the bill was for. And I said, okay, let's make a deal. That's the last time that we're ordering cocktails when we're out having a dinner. Have your glass of wine before you leave the house. I mean, that's an easy way to be more frugal with food. There's only two ways that you can really do it. You can buy less or pay less. And so pay less means that you're going to join a food co-op or look at buying in bulk. Look at the store's loss leaders. Stockpile the things that you use a lot of. You know, there's lots of ways that we can trim costs, reduce the meltdown that people are having emotionally about the economic situation that not only this country, but the world is in right now. And so maybe a few of those ideas will take some worries away, but mostly what I want you to do is go out and buy a head of cabbage today and fix yourself some coleslaw. My favorite recipe is still a spoonful of brown rice vinegar, a spoonful of honey, a spoonful of real high-quality mayonnaise, and a spoonful of plain yogurt to cut that fat and make that sweet and sour coleslaw out of it. How big is the spoon? Depends on how much cabbage you're putting down. But I think if you make that coleslaw this week, you're going to find out why I believe we need to eat some of that cabbage every single day, not only for frugal food reasons, but because of its protection against cancer.